Writers, I know you love Serena Bowen, but have you read Serena Bowen? If you haven't, you should. First off, because her books are killer fun, and secondly, because every one is a masterclass in pacing, characterization, and plot. And if you think plotting romance is easy because, quote, we know what's going to happen, unquote, then call me again after you've tried it. Her latest is The New Guy, but if you're new to her world, I strongly recommend Brooklyn Air. Bet you can't stop with just one. Find out more at serenabowen.com.
Is it recording?
Now it's recording.
Yay!
Go ahead.
This is the part where I stare blankly at the microphone and try to remember what I'm supposed to be doing.
All right, let's start over.
Awkward pause.
I'm going to wrestle some papers.
Okay.
Now one, two, three. Okay.
Hey writers, Serena here with another episode of Am Writing, the podcast about writing all the things. Short things, long things, fiction, nonfiction, pitches, and proposals. In short, this is the podcast about getting the work done. And I am here today with a friend of mine whose name has come up on this podcast so many times before. My friend Lauren Blakely is a fantastic author of romance novels. She has had so many books on various bestsellers lists that, you know, it's hard to name any particular one. And she is also one of the nicest people in publishing. And therefore, I picked on her to have a discussion with me today. And welcome, Lauren.
Well, thank you so much for having me, Serena.
You are welcome. You have new books coming out in the bookstore, don't you?
Yes, that is true. I have it's not my first traditional release, but it's sort of my first traditional release in a very long time. So I have a deal with Sourcebooks, and they are putting out some of my football romances, starting with Most Valuable Playboy, which is an older title, and they're doing a reissue. And then later this year, I am doing a simultaneous release with them for a brand new small-town rom-com. It seemed like a good idea. So that's kind of fun.
Most Valuable Playboy is the cutest title I have ever heard. In fact, if you want to learn how to title a book, go into the books, go into Amazon and just type in Lauren Blakely, and it's like a little masterclass in how to find fun titles. So you and I have been doing this for a long time now. I feel like in some ways an old war horse of publishing. And there is a topic that's been on my mind a lot lately. And I feel like after a decade in this business plus, I feel finally maybe like halfway qualified to talk about this topic, which is how to have a thick skin. And what does having a thick skin even mean? Like, is that a useful phrase and terminology or not? And, you know, how do we survive to be war horses like this? Because if we didn't find that way to live in a world that is full of critique, we wouldn't still be here. So we must, between the two of us, know something about this topic. And that's why I wanted to talk to you about it. What do you think of this topic?
I think it is absolutely vital for a long-term career because it's so easy to spiral. It is incredibly easy to get lost in criticism, in bad reviews. It's all out there. And I remember when you and I were first discussing this, I wound up in one of those rabbit holes myself that night. I was looking something up and I found a Reddit thread about how bad my books were.
Oh, God.
And I thought, wow. And of course, because I'm human, I put my finger in the fire a little bit longer. And I read some of the comments. And I even remember discussing it with Mr. Blakely at dinner that night. But the thing is, it didn't affect me for more than an hour. And I don't know if my answer is necessarily going to be ideal for everybody, but I think a lot of it is really because of therapy. I thought about it. I'm okay. Why did it not affect me? But that's partly because I've been in therapy for years, but it's partly because one of the things that I have learned and that I have to keep reinforcing constantly is that we remember the negative things for longer and probably in a deeper way than we remember the positive things. And that's something that my therapist has told me over time as we've worked on other issues not relating to writing and so on, but it's really applicable to writing. And I keep going back to it when I find myself spiraling, when I find myself doubting, and I think, is that true? Do these books of mine suck? Oh, are they all the same? But I just have to step back and remind myself, wait, I'm holding on to this because it's this natural human instinct to remember the fear and to remember the pain so that we're ready to fight at any moment. And just kind of that awareness, I think, has probably what helps me to let go of it maybe a little sooner than I would have otherwise.
Right. Okay. Yeah, so you said so many useful things just now. I think that most people who do this job recognize that they hold on to the negatives longer than the positives. Like, you can be in this world and do this work or any kind of work where you're putting yourself out there for natural criticism. I mean, there's literally a rating on each of us. Like, you can pull up my Goodreads listing, and you can see in hard numbers what the world on Goodreads thinks of me as an average rating. I am like a, 4.1 person or whatever, And there are jobs in this world, thank the goodness, that don't come with a numerical rating. And I've had those jobs too. Like when I worked on Wall Street, there was no Goodreads star rating for me. But instead, once a year on January 15th, they would tell me exactly how much I was worth. Like, here is your bonus number. You are this year an X dollars person. You're welcome. So we all have somebody who's trying to tell us what we're worth. But that like ability, this open forum for people to criticize you and I and our work is open 24 hours a day. So I did giggle when I was emailing with you and I'm like, I want to record an episode with you about how to have a thick skin. And your reply was, well, you realize that you're talking to someone who just fell down a rabbit Reddit hole about how bad my books are. But that doesn't make this not a useful conversation, because your ability to climb out of that rabbit hole is all that we're after here.
I think that's exactly it, Serena. As writers, as people, as humans, we are all going to experience that. I think it's very hard to live in a world where you have complete blinders on to the things that people are saying about your work, no matter what you do. Last night I was looking up an attorney and my first thought was, oh, I wonder if she has reviews online somewhere, right? We can check doctors out. Everybody has reviews somewhere. So naturally we're going to encounter them for our own work. If you're going to your own Amazon page to clean it up, there's that rating, as you said. So avoiding it, I don't think is really going to be the answer. It's really finding the skills that work for you, whether it's checking in with a friend who boosts you up and reminds you you're great. Or maybe it's maybe you have a folder that has emails you've received from readers that tell you you're their favorite author, or that tell you why they loved your book, or that tell you how it mattered to them when they were in a dark place. Whatever it is, like for me, it's kind of just that reminder that this is how the brain works. That's the technique that kind of works for me. But I think it can be different for everybody. I even remember a few weeks ago, one of my books, Plays Well With Others, was mentioned in People magazine, and you pointed it out to me. And that's one of the things, just having friends in the business who are there to lift you up and elevate you and kind of remind you that you're awesome. And I feel like we do that for each other Susan Stoker is somebody who developed a habit of messaging every author she knew when they hit USA Today.
Yes, I've gotten those messages from Susan.
And it's so delightful. And I started doing that recently from time to time. I messaged Lena Hendricks when I saw that she hit a couple of weeks ago. Catherine Cowles has hit recently. So I'm sure she's hearing from other people too, but I'll always message her. So I feel sometimes it's just a matter of just being positive with your friends, and because you're going to need that as a writer to get through those days when you feel either it's your own inner voice saying, I did a terrible job, or it's you coming across a review that isn't great. You just need the reminders, whatever they are for you, whether it's an email, whether it's a positive review, whatever it is, to refer back to, because you're going to have the days and the moments when everything hurts.
Right, right. Just by coincidence, today I happened to see a quote that was written by someone on the internet talking about like things they learned in therapy. And this really leaped off the page for me because of its association with this conversation we're having right now. And this is the quote. You do not have to attend every conversation you're invited to.
Ooh. That's a good one.
Yeah. So, you know, that might be that Reddit thread or, you know, I have stumbled on these too, like bad reviews. And sometimes with regard to bad reviews, well, I lately have a little bit of wisdom about this. So sometimes I have noticed in myself that I can see some kinds of bad reviews and feel literally nothing. And then there's another line from a bad review that will haunt me for days. Like, they're not all the same. Like, if you go and you see a one-star review on one of your books and it says, too much romance in this book, or too much sex in this book, or something that, and you'll just like roll your eyes and laugh, right? Like, because the values inherent in your work are that your books are both romantic and sexy. But if somehow somebody manages to give you a one-star review that feels like it is against your values or is exactly the opposite of what you were trying to do, then like that one would sting.
Or if you know there's something you could have done better, but maybe you couldn't execute on it. Or maybe it's a fear you have about your own writing. That uh-huh. Those are the ones that stick out too. And I also think what can be complicated to balance is there is somewhat of a belief that we should look at our reviews to see if there's any commonality in criticism to make us better writers. That because reviews exist, we should sift through them and see, well, what sort of feedback is there that I could change for the next one? It's hard to know if we should really be doing that because that feels like it's sort of a recipe for self-torture. But occasionally there might be common themes. And that's why sometimes I think it's helpful if you have a trusted person, whether it's a business manager, an admin, or somebody that can give an, like if you are a writer who feels like they need to improve their craft somehow and they're not sure how, they're not getting the advice they need from their editor, they're not getting it from other people, and you do feel you need to kind of open up that forum to, okay, what are readers saying about my work? It's probably a good idea to have somebody else maybe sift through those and say, okay, I noticed a common theme that maybe you use too many trendy words and your book should feel less dated. But, oh, okay, I can do that in the next one or whatever it is. It's hard to balance it, though, because there is some validity to that, right? There is some validity to, okay, what can I do to improve my work versus am I letting everybody get in my head while I'm writing?
Right. So I have some thoughts about this. I wonder if we need to draw a distinction between reviews and feedback. Because reviews are for the reviewer in some ways and for other readers. And a review makes no promises to the writer other than this is what the reviewer was thinking about in that 10-minute period they decided to write a review. And also what the reviewer had for lunch that day. And like all this stuff that it's really more about them than it is about us. So when we ask for feedback from somebody we trust, that's like a completely different exercise. So I would actually say that reviews are not the place to go for that feedback unless you literally have nowhere else to go.
Yeah, I think that's true. I think if you are a writer who wants to change your style for some reason, wants to find little areas of improvement, you probably are better off finding a trusted group of people and asking them, hey, what do my books need, rather than trying to glean that from reviews. But I also think it's very easy to believe that reviews would be the place to find that. So hopefully we can share some of our wisdom. It's like, you're probably not necessarily going to find all of that in the reviews, because for the one person who says that was cringy, the next person is going to be delighted by the cheese.
Right.
So if you really need to know, assemble a beta group of people who are going to give you that. Find four or five influencers, two or three influencers, whatever you find that you need, if you're not getting it from editors and other people, and really ask them to critique your work and figure out what it is that right. you need. And hopefully those are some of the things that can help writers from spiraling into, but this reviewer said this or that. Oh, I got a bad review on Amazon today. Well, we all did.
Right. So also, when you were talking, I was reminded of something that Marie Force said a really long time ago. She is another very prolific romance author who's been in the business for years. And she said that it wasn't until she started reading some of her reviews that she was able to understand what readers were taking from her books. Like, she thought she was writing about one thing, and then readers were really there for the big family dynamics. And I thought that was so interesting, because this has happened to me too before. Like, but the thing is, she was able to learn that from the good reviews, not the bad ones.
Interesting.
Like, yeah, like, you could read your good reviews to figure out what your strengths are, to lean into them, and you don't actually have to read all your terrible reviews, you know? like the people who are just angry at the world, who want to leave you a one star because the book somehow didn't meet the expectations that they formed for you, maybe isn't the right person to teach you what's working.
That's a really good point. I think about tropes that I personally don't like. I am not personally a huge fan of the pregnancy trope. So if I were a reader and leaving reviews as a reader, which I don't do, I'm not the right person to give you feedback on your surprise pregnancy or your secret baby book. But readers love those, right?
Yeah.
So right. If you are a writer who wants to write secret baby or pregnancy, you should not read reviews from people like me, because your book is never going to be for people like me. It's going to be for the many, many, and there are countless of them, because it's a very popular trope. It's going to be for those people. So that's a really good point. You should read the reviews from the people who love those books and make sure you lean into those things. And I think that's what I tried to do with, not to make it about me, but with my current hockey series, is to really study what are the things that people are loving about sports romances these days, whether it's my sports romances or whether it's Becca Mack or Liz Tomforti. What is it that people love? And I think a lot of it really is, it's similar to the Marie feedback. It's they love the big found family dynamics. That's one of the things I think that resonates so much about sports romance. They want to feel that the guys, for instance, are there and supportive of each other, that right. locker room, as much as they're giving each other a hard time and trash talking each other, that they're family and they stand up for each other. And if it's an MF romance, they want to feel that the women are, they sort of have, we all have each other's backs and adjust each other's crowns when it falls off. And those right. are the things that you can figure out from your own positive reviews or from the reviews of others who are kind of leaders in the genre. So that's good advice. I'm going to keep doing that.
Well, it's just, you know, I have learned over time that even when I make a mistake, like if I do something in a book that I then figure out later was not optimal, I don't need to thrash myself to the world. Like, it's not that helpful for me to, you know, down talk my books to readers at any point. You know, if somebody wants to ask me a question and I will answer it honestly. Like, you know, I could have done a better job at that one thing. But if I discover on my own and it's not part of a dialogue, like, you know, trash talking your own work is something that we shouldn't engage in because there's just too many people out there in the world who are willing to do it for us.
It's very true. And it's very easy to go back and look at your prior work and see it through the lens of your current work and think, oh, if I were writing that story today, I would never have done that. But who knows? And the fact is, people like our older works too, for different mm-hmm. reasons. They worked at different times. It should be this evolving thing. If I'm writing the same way I did in 2014, that means I probably have not evolved as a writer. It doesn't mean I've kept all the readers who liked me in 2014, but your writing style should shift. So that's good advice too, because I do think it is tempting to kind of hide some of our backlist books. Oh, I don't want to talk about that one. Though I honestly have only one book that I'm really not a huge fan of in my catalog. And it's the one book I have never made into audio because I know the problems in the storyline and I would have to completely redo it. And I've said it in my reader group, it's burned for me. But that's kind of the only book of mine that I will say those bad things about because it's not real, but yet there are people who like it.
Yeah.
So it's not that helpful to do that because there's always going to be somebody. And I think about authors that I enjoy and sometimes I do like their earlier work. And sometimes I like something in the middle of their career. Books speak to different people at different times.
They sure do. You know, I just remembered something funny I meant to tell you about star ratings. When I've been sort of on this journey to understand what it means to have a thick skin and, you know, how we judge if we have one or not. So I looked up one of my book's star ratings, okay? But I looked it up on four different platforms and I wanted to show you how that worked for me. So guess what? On BarnesandNoble.com, I am a 4.6 out of 5 star author.
Nice.
Well, thank you. Because on Goodreads, that same book has a rating of 3.92. And on Amazon, and I love how Goodreads is kind enough to calculate the value of my soul to 2 decimal places. On Amazon, though, which is owned by this same company, that book is a 4.2 star book. And on Audible, again, same company, is a 4.5 star book. So which of those am I? Am I worth 3.92 or am I worth 4.6, you know?
and does it keep you up at night?
Yeah, exactly. So it was just one of the fun things that I found when I was thinking about this topic. Like, oh, you know, if I were really setting out to judge myself as a give myself a star rating as an author, it's not even easy. You can't even do it.
Yeah, everyone says something different.
Yep.
But that's a good point because it sort of comes down to, I mean, of course it comes down to you, but I think that's what we have to remember is that we have these tools and sometimes it is realizing that there's not consistency in what people necessarily think of your work. And when you see something like that, maybe that's the tool that a writer needs to realize, oh, okay, I'm going to leave that Reddit hole behind and not go there again. These are, and hopefully that's what listeners take away, that all of these can become tools when you get in that funk about your work.
Right. Because those people who were busy trashing whatever that one book was on Reddit have not looked at your rating on Audible.
Exactly.
This has been such a fun conversation about how to have a thick skin. I think we're actually maybe getting good at this.
decades, know, baby. We've got decades.
I know, right? That's one of the benefits of being old is that, you know, wisdom. Like Mama said, you know, that this would be true. But now I'm pretty excited to see that at least I have like a working vocabulary for for what's bothering me. And in terms of action items, you mentioned, you know, minutes and minutes ago that keeping like a file of emails that people have sent you for when you, you know, need to remember what's valuable. I actually have that as a Google document.
That's awesome. I love it.
Yeah, and I don't put everything in there. I just put those like special ones.
That's good. You need those.
Yeah. I went to a yoga class where we had a sub, and the yoga sub opened the class by asking us to each name something that we were proud of from that week that we had done that had gone well. And it didn't have to be a big thing. It could even be a little thing. And everyone in the room really struggled. But because I was on a kick of like of making sure I was able to recognize the little things to celebrate, like I have that as a page in my planner. So I was ready.
That's awesome.
I tried four new recipes and I did this volunteer thing or whatever. And everybody looked at me like I was an alien, but I was ready. Cause sometimes you have to have that. So one thing we love to do at the end of episodes is to call out a book that we've read or are reading that we particularly enjoy. So I would love to ask Lauren Blakely if there's something you've read lately that you've loved.
Yeah, actually, I requested an advanced copy of Shoot Your Shot, which is a debut novel by Lexi LaFleur Brown, who is a hockey wife and also a hockey influencer. And it was really good.
Wow.
I was so happy. I enjoyed it so much.
Yay.
It's really, you never know with debut books, but it's really fantastic. A great rom-com, very clever, very sexy, and has some really good mental health representation. So I recommend it with my whole chest when it comes out in March.
Yay. That is fantastic. I am reading and really enjoying this book, which is The Notebook, A History of Thinking on Paper by Roland Allen. I'm in a little bit of a nonfiction place mentally right this second because I was finishing up a revision, and sometimes you're in that spot where you just can't read anything that's another person's story because you're too busy holding your own in your head. But this book is about the history of notebooks and who, you know, what did paper do to change how people kept track of stuff? And it's so delightfully nerdy. And I feel like it was written just for me.
It's so you. I was going to say that. There has never been a book more appropriate for you.
Right? And the author, Roland Allen, his bio ends like this. And he enjoys stationery a little too much. And I thought, same, buddy, same.
That's fantastic.
So, listeners, please do yourself a favor and look up Lauren Blakely, who is fantastic on social media, but also really knows how to give books fun titles. So if there's anything you can learn from her, first start there. But also, and then read the descriptions of her books, because she's super good at flap copy. And when I get, like, really knotted up about my flap copy, sometimes I knock on her door and I'm like, could you read this? Because it's really bad.
It's anyway. Not bad.
Oh, some of them. So yeah, thank you for tuning in with us today. And until next week, keep your butt in the chair and your head in the game.
The Hashtag AmWriting podcast is produced by Andrew Perella. Our intro music, aptly titled Unemployed Monday, was written and played by Max Cohen. Andrew and Max were paid for their time and their creative output because everyone deserves to be paid for their work.
Pause, stop, stop. Thank you.
you.